This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
When you're on a holiday, you can't find the words to say.
What an impactful life was led by the American dream, Dusty Rhodes. News of his passing late last week traveled rapidly, not just around the wrestling world, but the entire pop culture and news world as well. Sports websites, magazines, television, network, broadcast, cable, anywhere around the world, everyone was talking about the American dream. Hi, everybody. This is Kevin Kelly. This is the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. We're going to do something a little special, a little different this week here on the Kevin Kelly Show. We're going to talk a lot about Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, who was so influential in my life as a fan. And we'll get our pal Dr. Tom on. Dr. Tom Pritchard will join us in a little while, and he'll talk to us about working with the dream. He spent a lot of time, worked very closely with him down in FCW before the WWE's developmental operation moved to Orlando and the Performance Center. So Tom has a lot of great stories about working with the dream and knowing the dream, and we'll talk to Tom a little bit later on. We will take care of some news and some things that are happening as well. There was a very good event last night. I did not get to see Money in the Bank, but JR and I will talk about that in a few minutes. I do want to start by talking about where I was this weekend and where I'm going to be coming this Friday. We had an amazing tryout camp this weekend for Ring of Honor Wrestling. We have about 40 athletes from all over the country. This time, and I think largely because the program is now on Destination America, it certainly didn't hurt. We had well over 50. And the trainers that were there all just dug in, worked hard. We still spent the same amount of time working and teaching and going over things. It was an amazing collaborative effort for two solid days. And we always laugh about this. On the application, we say that the Saturday session will go from 10 a.m. to about 5 p.m. And Sunday will go from 10 a.m. to about 4. Well, we have never ended anywhere near close to 5, nor 4 on Sunday. And we did set a record this past Saturday. We didn't finish until 10 minutes of 11 p.m., so for almost 13 solid hours, it was wrestling instruction and teaching and matches and critiques and ideas and passion and energy. And we were looking for people that were undeniable. And that undeniability was seen in quite a few. I'm so blessed to be part of Ring of Honor. It is an amazing group, an amazing company. And the athletes that we see in our doorways just continue to get better and better each and every time. This Friday night, it is going to be another pay-per-view extravaganza from Ring of Honor Wrestling. It's best in the world, and it's going to be from the Terminal 5 in New York City. Special start time of 9 p.m. Eastern. Now, it's available on all the cable and satellite providers, just like normal, but also on the Flips TV app as well. So make sure you check out ROHWrestling.com for all the previews, how you can get Flips, how you can find out if your cable or satellite provider is carrying Best in the World, and all the results, of course, afterward will be available there as well. A lot of the focus is on Jay Lethal, Jay Briscoe, Battle of the Belts. That's the main event. Lethal's television title versus Jay Briscoe's world title. Both will be on the line. One man will emerge with two titles, and that will happen this Friday night. There is an amazing opening to the pay-per-view, which is available now. You can search for it on the ROH Wrestling YouTube page. I think you can gather it through the Facebook page as well. It's available if you check out ROH Wrestling on Twitter. It's one of the finest pieces of dramatic art that ROH has turned out. And kudos to the production team for pulling that one together. And make sure you go and download and check that out. So we'll be talking about the dream later on, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, who passed away late last week. But our pal, JR, Justin Rosero, is here.
Yep.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. I'm a little tired, a little wonky, a little brain fried, but in a very, very good place right now because these camps just have a way of just energizing you. I can't fully describe the feeling, but it was amazing, certainly worth it. But I hear I missed a hell of a show last night.
I don't know if you missed a hell of a show. I'll say you missed a thumbs-up show with a hell of a match and then some other good stuff and some questionable stuff. How about that?
Okay, that's fair. Okay. That is fair. I heard from a couple of people that it was really good and I should go out of my way to watch it. But I trust your opinion. I trust their opinion as well.
Well, yeah, you should definitely watch parts of it. There's some stuff you can pass. And you're not as tied as, you know, there's a lot of anger on the internet around some of what happened last night. And you're not really as tied into caring as much about who wins. So from your point of view, you'll probably enjoy the show more than other people did.
Yeah. And is that because of the outcome of the Kevin Owens, John Cena match?
Yes and no. I've actually seen more people kind of be, you know, adjusted about that than I expected there to be. Still, some people are upset. And I think there are gripes both ways. Sheamus winning Money in the Bank seemed to actually piss off the most people. And then the finish to a couple of other matches didn't help. But, you know, the money going in was on Reigns. Late, there was a shift of thought thinking Kofi Kingston may actually win. Because, A, why would he be in the match? And, you know, obviously to do spots. But the thought process was that he is fighting Brock Lesnar on that Japan Super Show that's going to be on the network on July 4th. And one of the ideas or rumors being bandied about was that Brock would kill him on that show and just take the briefcase and walk off. So some people thought maybe Kofi was going to win. You had Dolph Ziggler in there, Neville as an upstart, Orton, Kane. And I think some just saw Sheamus as not really having been built or having much of a direction, and it felt a little swervy to have someone win. Now, they might have a plan in place. We'll see. But there doesn't seem to be a clear path to Sheamus challenging for the title just yet.
Well, okay, so you have the that controversial outcome. I know that there was one stinkeroo of a match. I heard about that one.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it's Big Show Ryback.
Yeah.
Which was disappointing because I was looking forward to that. And I don't think it was really a stinkeroo as much. I thought they were having a decent kind of big man match. And it had a really bad ending with Miz
right.
intentionally getting involved in having the match end in a DQ with Big Show winning. And that was disappointing because I do think Ryback and Show could have a pretty good big man battle. You know, we saw Reigns have one Big Show. And not that Ryback, I don't think he's on Reigns' level, but he's been pretty good lately. So that was more disappointing than anything, especially with the finish. And it seems like maybe they're setting up for a three-way now with Miz.
Hmm. Well, okay, so the high point of the show was it the main event with Rollins and Ambrose, or was it Owens and Cena?
Owens and Cena, a legit match of the year candidate, a step up probably from their match 2 weeks ago. I thought Cena was fantastic throughout the match. I mean, Owens is Owens. You know, he's always going to be great. I thought Cena hung with him and even kind of carried in spots. I thought he was great. They're both great. Yes, there was some anger about Owens winning clean. I saw, you know, some.
You mean Cena winning clean.
Cena winning clean. I've seen multiple schools of thought on this. Like, one was, you know, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to maybe get a loss out of the way and not have the baggage of being undefeated on him, because we've already seen that with multiple other guys lately. You know, losing to John Cena in a big-time match where he beats the crap out of him and hangs with him and just beat him 2 weeks ago isn't always the worst thing either. I mean, he beat him pretty decisively, and Cena really had to eke out this win. It's not like it's kind of different than the other wins he's had over, like, Bray and Rusev and other guys that have kind of caused a lot of the upset fans. And then the post-match, to me, completely made up for it. So Cena wants to show respect. They go to shake hands. Owens fakes him out, clubs him, and then gives him the powerbomb on the ring apron. And normally you'll see Cena kind of fight and get to his feet and walk off, but he actually had to be kind of like helped up the ramp, and his back was like looked really effed up. And Owens was doing this awesome like perverted laugh as he's walking up the ramp, laughing at Cena in pain, just this audible loud cackle. So I like it. What would be really cool, and I don't think it's going to happen, is if Cena does the open challenge tonight, Owens comes out and just pulverizes his back and wins the title. Like, I think that would be complete you know, rehab from last night. But as is, I don't think it was that awful of a loss. I mean, I think everyone's just defensive because of how things have gone with Cena feuds the last couple of years. I'm really hoping Owens is different. I'm hoping they have a rubber match and Owens wins. If Cena wins the next match, I'll be kind of pissed off.
Well,
but that now, it was a great time, match, so highly recommended.
Yeah, and last time that we had talked about, boy, the placement of that match and how the rest of the card suffered. Did they make adjustments accordingly on this card?
No, they probably should have closed with it. And I thought Rollins and Ambrose really worked their asses off. They went 35 minutes in that ladder match, and it felt a little anticlimactic. And it's not their fault. Like, they did everything they had to do. You know, the guys on our reaction show kind of compared it to that old Triple H Shawn Michaels Hell in a Cell kind of, or Triple H style that went about 10 minutes too long, probably could have been about 25. But again, nothing they did wrong, and the match is fine. I get to see where some were maybe a little bit bored with it. I enjoyed it, maybe that's because of the setting I was in. We had like six of us hanging out watching, so it was kind of a laid back atmosphere. And I dug it. I was fine with it. And Rollins got a fairly clean win. The end is where they both yanked the belt and fell, but it was kind of like the fumble rule in football where Rollins had possession as they hit the mat, pretty much so, and Ambrose let go when he hit the mat. But I thought it was, it's a cool that those two guys are closing out pay-per-view, so it's hard to complain too much. But this time around, I probably would have had Cena Owens close out the show. Because then they sandwiched in between the primetime players beat New Day for the tag titles, which I think was questionable too, only because New Day, I thought, had a lot of gas in the tank. But Scott mentioned this on the reaction show, and I agree with him. I think they had that happen. They had the primetime players win because it was a heel-heavy show. Outside of Cena winning, all heels won. So I think that's why they did that title change.
And the reaction to the primetime players winning was antipathy? Excitement?
No. In the arena, I think it was kind of flat. Only because I don't think the primetime players have been built up well enough to have made it really mean anything. But just like fans' reactions on the internet that I've seen and heard, they all seem, happy enough for them. They seem like two nice guys. They work hard. They're over enough. I just think a lot of people thought New Day had some gas in the tank. But one theory I like is that because it was Xavier Woods and not Kofi, that'll be their kind of excuse and story, and then maybe they win it back when it's Big E and Kofi.
Oh, I see. I got you.
So they did the Freebird thing. The Diva match we didn't talk about, though, I liked a lot. Paige and Nikki. One of the better Diva matches they've had on WWE TV, not kind of NXT, in a long time. They worked really hard, too. I thought Paige got a good promo, and actually, I thought she did a nice job putting a little storyline twist in it, too, where she said, complaining about how no one stepped up to help her and the Bella Empire that's, pervaded WWE, and how they just do whatever they want. And at the end, they did the twin magic where Brie snuck in to pretend Nikki. She had her bra padded. And that was kind of funny. So they ended up screwing Paige over. So I think this is all building towards Paige bringing up a fellow Diva from NXT to help have her back against the Bellas. To me, that's how it feels like it's heading.
My fellow commentator in wrestling, Mark Madden, who also espouses his views every day on Pittsburgh Sports Radio, he wrote a column. I saw it on WrestleZone last week where he talked about how the Divas, the era of the Diva is over, and that the four horsewomen of the WWE, if you will, of NXT, need to ride in and kind of run them out of town. It's a controversial, thought. It's a strong direction to go in. Mm-hmm. But do you think that when you compare what you're seeing from the Divas out of Divas with WWE and the, I can't even call them Divas in NXT because they're so complete. The Diva act on WWE kind of rings hollow. It's like, God, the girls are on NXT are so much better. What do you think?
I think they're given a better chance to succeed in NXT is a difference. And I think when we see, they got 11 minutes last night, Paige and Nikki, and had a very good match. So I do think there's some women on the main roster that definitely deserve to be lumped in. Like, you could say bring up all the NXT women. I wouldn't say run off everyone on the main roster. Maybe a few would sink or swim, but I think you still have some pretty high quality up there, or at least, passable quality. Like, Natalya is fine. I think Nikki has really improved Paige. I mean, maybe Brie is best served as kind of Nikki's, backup more than actually competing. But I do think there's a handful still on the main roster that can work and should be blended in. And, you know, there's enough TV time. Why can't we have a wide swath of women's stuff? Like, why not have kind of the workers? And then you can see, almost like when they had the brands. Remember, like, Raw had the women's workers, you know, and then SmackDown kind of had the fluff women that did, like, the diva-type story.
Probably a poor choice of words.
Yep.
I'm just going to say that.
We'll let it go. We'll keep pumping it out there. But no, I think they could do something where they just have multiple storylines going on. You have the total divas type stuff going on in addition to the, you know, women's, the legit serious women's who want the women's division that want the title. So maybe you have the women who aren't as well versed in the ring focus more on ancillary storylines, whereas the women who want the title and are the good workers focus on the belts. You know, so you can have multiple things going on at once. And the diva stuff isn't going away as long as E keeps that TV show going.
That's true. And that was something that, you know, because we were talking about that article kind of over the weekend. I brought it up like in conversation, just like, what's the state of women's wrestling right now? Mm-hmm. And what's the direction moving forward? And the certainly the power of the Total Divas show is a driving factor in what many said would be the reason why the show doesn't change. So overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, with 1 being the worst, 10 being the best. JR, what say you? What is your vote on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view?
6.5, you know, which I think is fine for them.
God, my friends said that it was they didn't give a number to it, but they, if I had asked them based upon the way that they were reacting to the show, I think their number would have been probably around 8.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends how, like I said, how tied you are to the results and how angry you would be. Like, if they're, and I'm not even angry about anything. I mean, Sheamus is questionable. I mean, it may go like a 7. I didn't think it was one of the better Money in the Bank matches. And I think the main event mileage varies. It's a long match. Like I said, probably 5 to 7 minutes too long. And they didn't give Rollins a complete decisive win. So, I mean, it was fine. I don't feel like I wasted 3 hours. I mean, I do think now that we're on the network with these things and the focus isn't on pay-per-view as much, they're going to be more open to doing kind of shadier or shicier finishes and not worrying as much about, oh, people paid $60 or $55 and we're giving them a screw job ending. You know, they used to hear a lot of complaints about. I think now that these are network specials, they're almost looked at as, you know, big clashes or big house shows in a way. And I've seen it mentioned by multiple people, both on our reaction show and Graham Cawthon and the History of Wrestling, mentioned how these are almost setting up like the big MSG monthly shows in a way now, where you book towards the next show right at the end of the last one. You know, they already set up Bray Wyatt versus Roman Reigns for Battleground during this show. So it feels like there's more of a flow back. Remember back like when, right around when you were starting, like the In Your Houses in like 95 and 96, kind of had this monthly flow from one to the next where they'd book a couple matches at the end of one and they all kind of, you know, ran together seamlessly. I feel like that's gone away a little bit lately, but we seem to be getting back to that now, where it's a pay-per-view or special event to me shouldn't necessarily be looked at as a standalone, this is June, Money in the Bank. It's more of like a blip on the storyline radar now that just you pay a little bit of money for it, but it's nothing more than maybe like a step up over Raw, SmackDown.
We'll be talking to Dr. Tom, as I mentioned. Of course, we'll be getting to talking about Dusty Rhodes here in the hour. We're gonna dispense like with our games and some of the, you know, more not. And we're not gonna be boo-hoo and weeping. We're gonna be just, you know, reminiscing and talking about what Dusty Rhodes meant to us as fans, as people, people in the industry, people that are fans of the industry. What is Dusty Rhodes? What's his legacy? Where is he in the all-time list? Favorite moments, things like that. We'll talk to Dr. Tom, and we'll get rolling with that. Of course, as I said, the big event with Ring of Honor is this Friday. Live on pay-per-view at 9 Eastern time, special start time with the best in the world pay-per-view, Jay Briscoe, the Ring of Honor World Champion, versus Jay Lethal, the Ring of Honor World Television Champion. That is going to be a special night, plus the TV, the tag team titles on the line, as well as the Addiction defends against Red Dragon in no disqualification, plus the return of AJ Styles. It's a live pay-per-view along with the Young Bucks, the Bullet Club, and six-man tag team action against the Kingdoms. Adam Cole, Michael Bennett, and Matt Taven with Maria Kanellis, and a whole lot more. That is this Friday night, 9 Eastern, and that's available on your cable satellite provider, also the Flips TV app, and wherever else. Maybe, who knows, maybe Boneheads will be showing it. JR will have it on at his house. Dan McGinn and King Basil will be watching it as well. It's going to be an extravaganza and a fun night. But we'll take a quick timeout. We'll get our pal Dr. Tom on the phone, and then we'll start talking about the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, as we look back an amazing life and career of the Dream. Right here is the Kevin Kelly Show. Kevin Kelly Show rolls on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com.
Here is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, your fans welcome you back, man.
First of all, I would like to thank the many, many fans throughout this country that wrote cards and letters to Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, while I was down. Secondly, I want to thank Jim Crockett Promotions for waiting and taking the time, because I know how important it was. Starrcade 85, it is to the resident fans, it is to Jim Crockett Promotions. And Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, with that weight, got what I wanted. Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work and got 4 or 5 kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time. And Ric Flair, you put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard time. And we all had hard times together. I admit I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hind is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne, and he's dead, brother. And the other one's right here. Nature Boy Ric Flair. The world's heavyweight title belongs to these people. I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world now. Reach it out. Because the love that was given me, and this time I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion on this Hard Time Blues Dusty Rhodes Tour 85. And Ric Flair, Nature Boy, let me leave you with this. One way to hurt Ric Flair is to take what he cherishes more than anything in the world. That's the world's heavyweight title. I'm gonna take it. I've been there twice. This time when I take it, Daddy, I'm gonna take it for you. Let's gather for it. Don't let me down now, because I came back for you, for that man up there that died 10, 12 years ago and never got the opportunity to see a real wolf champion. And I'm proud of you, and thank God I have you. And I love you. Love you!
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Griscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PeakToBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceMeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PeakToBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, tag teams back again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Anderson has never been nothing but a walk behind her. And when you walk behind and you're not a leader, then the view never changes, baby. The view never changes, baby. The view never changes. You have the ability to be the world's heavyweight wrestling champion. There is not a greater athlete at your age in this sport. But I would ask your favor. I want to ask your favor in front of God and the whole world. I know that the Clash of Champions on August the 24th, you put your name on the dotted line. I don't want you to look for another partner. I don't want you to go and find another man. I don't want you to go out and get on your knees and beg another scum-sucking pig to be your partner. I'm asking you, if you can carry this old out of shape, old bent out, old spindly legged man, I want to be your partner. I don't need no handshake, because out there right now tonight there's people with their brothers and their sisters and their wives. They are blood. The Kennedys were blood. The Earps were blood. The Rhodes are blood. I don't need a handshake. What I need now from you is just a hug and a kiss to seal the deal, baby.
Might end up with your foot in your mouth. You can't judge an apple by looking.
All right, we're back on the Kevin Kelly Show, and we're now going to talk all about the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, the news of his passing, as I said right at the beginning. I mean, it was the headline news of the day, mainstream news all over, whether it was sports, entertainment, Fox, the New York Daily News, didn't matter what corner of the world, it was news. And that's because he was such an amazing figure in the history of professional wrestling, somebody that knew him and worked with him. And spent a lot of time with him over the past few years. He's also a great friend of mine and a great friend to the show. It's Dr. Tom Pritchard. Hey, Tom, I know you're really busy tonight, but thanks for a few minutes of jumping on here, talking about the dream. Give us a couple of quick minutes if you can, and just give me some thoughts and some snapshots, if you will, because every time I talked to you when you were working with him, you always had some amazing Dusty stories.
Yeah, well, to put it in perspective, Kevin, this is a guy that I watched when I was a kid in Texas and knew him as Dirty Dusty Rhodes. In fact, last year, I was going through some of my old Houston programs, and there was one with Dirty Dusty Rhodes from Fort Smith, Arkansas, and I put it in the mail and mailed it to him. It was from 1970, and just to have that in my collection and to know this guy who was Elvis, if there was ever an Elvis in wrestling, or ever a revered person, it was Dusty Rhodes. Everybody had a story about him. I can remember it was about 6 years ago, 5-6 years ago, Darius Rucker came to town and was playing the Tampa Amphitheater. And his people called the Dream at the FCW Arena and said, Darius would like you to come down and he'd like to meet you. And then Darius Rucker got on the phone, and Dream finally went down that night to the amphitheater and was called out on stage and introduced. He was known everywhere he went, not just in Tampa, but everywhere he went, people knew the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. It was amazing because, as you all know, and anybody listening to this podcast, if you're a wrestling fan, from the 70s especially, those guys were larger than life in a different way they are now. They had to come out and they had to, no real entrance music. Their entrance had to make a break. I mean, Dusty Rhodes had the most colorful entrance, one of the most colorful entrances in professional wrestling. It was Hulk Hogan, Ventura, and even Ric Flair who wanted to be like Dusty Rhodes. He was the guy they all looked to. So I feel bad for the kids today who didn't get a chance to see Dream in his prime, but at least they had the opportunity to learn from him and be mentored by him in NXT and SCW. He was that star, Kevin, that larger-than-life star. And then for me to get to know him the way I did, and you know the type of person I am, I'm not a real easy guy to get to know, Dream just flowed. And every time I talked to him, you know, we talked pretty regularly for the past 3 years too, but every single time I talked to him, within the first 2 to 3 minutes, we'd be laughing, and he would be saying these ridiculous things about shooting his Red Ryder BB gun, and we're going to be at a Red Ryder club. And just you and me, just you and me going to be the only ones in the club. You know what I mean? Just stupid stuff. But I mean, this is from a guy who's Elvis in the wrestling world.
When you got to meet him, were you intimidated by him at all? I mean, you were in the presence of wrestling royalty.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, let me explain it like this. When I first met Dusty Rhodes, he was naked. And he just walked around the dressing room with his boots on and a t-shirt, but he wouldn't be wearing any trunks. So, yes, I was intimidated. I was intimidated by all those guys. My God, here was a guy one of the most charismatic performers. You know, he was in the League of Andre the Giant as an attraction. He didn't need to be the world champion, but he wanted to be the world champion. And last August in Charlotte, he dropped by the camp and told the kids, he said, you know, people talk about my massive ego and talk about how I was. And I said, yeah, you've got to have an ego if you're going to be on top. And he explained it that way, and he was very matter of fact. And that's what they had to do. And that's even more the reason to admire him, because he came up through that era, survived the rest of the eras, was sent to the desert, as he said, you know, got released, and then he came back. And he ended up where he should have been, with the biggest and best sports entertainment company in the world. Because make no doubt about it, he's a great professional wrestler, but he was a damn fine sports entertainment too.
Hell yeah. And I remember as a kid reading about, you know, I'd see him every week on not every week, but I would always follow him, Championship Wrestling from Florida or Georgia Championship Wrestling. So I was always seeing or hearing the Dream a lot on television. But then I would read the After Mags, and I would see that he would be in New York. And then we got the MSG cable, and I saw that he's wrestling in Madison Square Garden, and he's in Texas, and he's working for Watts. and he's working everywhere. He's going to Canada. He's going to Japan. He's working for the Sheik. How did he keep straight and maintain such an amazingly grueling schedule?
Because he was the American dream. Flair and the dream is the dream. He lived it, walked it, breathed it. If that meant being on that grueling schedule and proving that you can out drink, out party, out do anybody else it is, that's the kind of man he was in his heyday. I didn't get to know him necessarily in his heyday as well as I did when we were at FCW. But listening to the stories and listening to him talk, going out to Studio 54 with Andy Warhol, you know, nobody maybe really gives a shit about that. But the point is, who else was with those people in that circle at that time? I don't believe there was anybody but the American Dream. You know, and that was so fascinating to me. And then again, like I said, to get to know him in this part of his life was even better. Because he could have been very antagonistic, Just he'll look for anything just to get something out of you. And that was so good because he was always working, and that's what those guys did back then. Always working, trying to give you, you know, an insight on what it's really like to be like that. Because after a while, it's not a character. It never was a character with him. That was, you know, like doing Dusty Rhodes. That was what was so cool about knowing, because that was Dusty Rhodes.
A lot of times, and you know, it's mainly said in real sports, legitimate sports. I'm 0-2 there. It's mainly said in other sports. Let's go that route, like football, basketball, baseball. That it's hard for top guys, big stars, Hall of Famers to transition into being a coach. That many times the role player is the better coach because he or she has studied the game. How was Dusty able to transition so well to teaching the youngest of the young in the WWE system?
I think the only difference was he was now explaining his motivation for doing what he did. I don't believe the Dream did anything different teaching the NXT and FCW kids than he did during his career, and that's learn how to manipulate what he wants. And he was a master manipulator. He was so talented. I got to see that inside of him, that part of him anyway, where he's trying to show you who's boss. And that was great because that's what he did. But he did it with such charm and such affection and sternness at the same time. How do you get those emotions in there? He did it. He got his message across. He was a hard ass when he needed to be a hard ass, and he was soft, and he was compassionate when he needed to be soft and compassionate. And he was, when I got to see that side of him, that he has two sides, but there's only really one side, and that's him being the two-sided American Dream. And that's why he was so successful, and that's why he was so amazing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you know, let me ask you this, do you know if the story is true, whether or not Dusty Rhodes was the first choice to take over for Bob Backlund, Iron Sheik? He was the first choice, and when they couldn't come to an agreement, the office went with Hulk Hogan. Do you know that to be true or not true?
Oh, I do not know that to be true. I really don't. In fact, I've never heard that, but stranger things have happened. I can't confirm it now.
It's something that I had heard, and I no one else has ever been able to confirm it for me, but I think in terms of like how that might have changed the wrestling business, but in terms of like what he was able to do for Jim Crockett Promotions as a producer, director, performer, all around everything that company needed in its strongest period. Does he get a bad rap, or does he get treated fairly based upon what you know about that era and time?
It's just like asking, will John Cena get a bad rap, or will they look at all the good he's done? I mean, people can talk about him. They were talking about him regardless. And I think, and he plainly said it, if you're going to be that guy, you got to be prepared with what comes with it. And that was taking the shots. And I think, from what I know, and especially when people look at the accomplishments, not only of Dream, but of Crockett at that time, or any place he even went to book or help out. I mean, it does speak for itself. Sure, it may have been overdone at times, and yes, repetition, doing the same thing will kill you, I guess, and they just weren't being smart with their money either. So I think, looking back on it, the end was inevitable, but he stood there and fought. He didn't lay down, and you have to admire him for that.
So if the Mount Rushmore of wrestling is built, where does Dusty Rhodes fit? Does he fit on that face of the mountain for you? If so, where? Where do you put him in the list of all-time greats?
Okay, because that's a question that gets asked so many times where I've thought about it, and my question here is, why is it set in stone that we only have to have four faces on that mountain? I mean, can't we find a bigger mountain? Because I don't think...
Tom, they're not making any more mountains. This is
West Virginia. So I'm looking at a mountain right now we could do it on.
All right. So
let me say this though, real quick. In all seriousness, when you talk about game changers, when you talk about superstars and you have to lump that category with the superstars like Elvis, everybody knows who Elvis is, even to this day, or Bruce Lee. I asked this weekend, Bruce Lee, you know, Elvis, you know, Luthez, you don't? Okay, and I understand that. So would Luthez be on a Mount Rushmore? In one era, yes, because that was what they were going after. Yeah, in this era, Dusty is certainly... He is a name that will be synonymous with professional wrestling, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. You can't mention Andre the Giant as well without those guys. He's in that league. He's in that small group.
Well, I think that's a very fair comparison. And did you ever feel the wrath of the bionic elbow during your wrestling career?
I actually teamed with him and Blue Meanie. I can't remember, but we worked with the Alan Martin or Test. Thank you. And Test, and I forgot who else. Maybe Matt Bourne and somebody else, two other guys. It was a long time ago, but I saw a picture. I never got the chance to feed in for the elbow, but I know he wanted to clock me a few times. and that was in the office, no doubt.
Well, yeah, of course. Again, the legacy of the American Dream and being able to work with him and sit with him in the office. What would be like the greeting that he might give you on any given day when you guys would see each other, when he would come into the FCW office? What kind of greeting would you get?
That depends on his mood. Yeah, that depends if he's in a good mood, if he's feeling better or not. Because and then we would go in the control room, and on TV days, we would eat watermelon, and we would talk and tell stories. And that was the great thing about it, Kevin. I mean, especially as a fan, you want to hear about the stories that you remember seeing or about the stories you remember hearing about, and then he tells you his version of it, whether it's true or not. Hell, it doesn't matter. It was great.
So Steve Corino said on Twitter, and we were talking about it this weekend, when he was traveling with Dusty, and when Dusty was running Turnbuckle, he asked him questions all the time, Corino being the annoying 26-year-old kid. And at one time he said, he asked him, "Hey, man, why did you put the belt on Garvin?" And he said, Dream said, "Because you weren't available. I was only 14 at the time." Well, stop asking such stupid questions then.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. So, but there will never be another American Dream, though.
There never will be. Absolutely. Hey, Tom, we're going to let you go. But thanks for jumping on with us, man. We really appreciate your time, and have fun tonight in Beckley, and we'll talk to you again soon. Okay, pal?
Thanks, Kevin. All right. You guys be safe.
So we'll keep the Dusty talk going now. JR, you want to jump in here? Because Tom had some great insight of being able to see him and work with him. And Tom is such a unique guy that when he started working with the Dream, he would call me and tell me stories about it. And yeah. I think he was surprised at the person who the Dream was, because I think he had an idea and a vision from the character that was on television. And I think he was waiting to see that there was this dramatic departure, and there really wasn't. It was the Dream all the time.
And now, you know, you grew up in Florida. That's where you really became a wrestling fan and spent a lot of time there going to shows. And, of course, Dusty, a big mainstay, big fixture in Florida. So tell me your memories, Kev, growing up as a Dusty fan, and kind of what he meant to you as you grew up in getting into or getting to know the business.
Well, he was the wrestler that we all imitated. Every kid in Florida, when Dusty was on top, if they were a wrestling fan, they would all be able to recite Dusty promos. And the one that is, of course, the most copied, you know, the Hard Times promo, but the most common catchphrases of Dusty, if you will.
If you will.
That was something that we all said. We all flashed the million-dollar smile, which was a big toothy grin with our eyes closed. We all threw bionic elbows. We all would look to get elbow pads on. It would to throw those bionic elbows. When you would land on your hip, you know, the standing bionic elbow was okay. But when you would run and jump in the air and land on your hip and crush your friend's chest with your elbow, it was like, ow, man, that really hurts my hip. But that's what we did. We lived and we died with the American Dream. When I was 12 years old, 1979, I was talking to my mom Saturday morning, because she put up with me as a wrestling fan growing up, and God bless her, she'll be 80 next week. And I said, Mom, I don't know if you know this, but Dusty Rhodes passed away this week. She said, he was your favorite, right? I said, yeah, he was. I said, Mom, do you remember the day that he won the world title? And she said, no. And I said, well, I remember every detail of it. And I recited to her exactly what we did that Saturday morning, getting up, going for a walk, going to this store, then coming back, stopping in a deli, going home, getting a sandwich. And it was like a 10-minute long story. I remembered every single detail. Getting home just before 12 o'clock to put the television on to watch Championship Wrestling from Florida. And the first thing that Gordon Solie tells us is that Dusty Rhodes has captured the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And I think it's what it's like when people see the winning numbers of the Powerball across the TV screen and realize that they have the winning ticket in their hands. That's the joy that I felt that day. I can't fully describe it, but I was just taken away completely by this and the highlights and everything. And I remember running and calling my friend Jim and telling him, and he was away that weekend with his dad, so I don't think he saw it. So I remember calling his house and trying to figure out where they were. But just, he was everything to me as a kid, JR. Absolutely everything.
Yeah, so slightly different for me, because I started watching wrestling in 1990 as a WWF fan up in the Northeast. So my first exposure to Dusty was his feud heading into WrestleMania VI, with, of course, Macho Man and Sherry, and him and Sapphire, the mixed tag. So that was really the first I saw of him. So I didn't know too much about his legacy until much, you know, many years later. I remember him going back to WCW, and one of my favorite pieces of work from him is in 1994. So he had returned to the company as an announcer, and then throughout 94, remember the Stud Stable started to torture Dustin, and they had the long feud going, and the Arn turned on him, and Dusty cuts this emotional promo with Dustin on WCW TV asking him to let him be his partner. And they talk, you know, he goes through the whole thing. Oh, he's never, you know, not a great dad. He was never there. You know, all I need is a, you know, a hug and a kiss to seal the deal. And, you know, they embase in the ring and the crowd's just going insane. To me, that's my, you know, just because I grew up in a later era, I have respect for his earlier promos, including Hard Times. But to me, the iconic Dusty promo is that one that led to the match at the Clash, the tag match that breaks down into a big brawl and then to War Games. That also featured a great Dusty moment where he goes in the bar and recruits the Nasty Boys to be on their War Games team. So those are my two of my favorite Dusty memories. And, of course, all his great commentary in WCW as well on the pay-per-views and Saturday Night, where, I mean, that's where I really got to fall in love with the guy, was through his inane commentary that was so, so good. The plunderin' and the clubberin' and all that stuff. So to me, those are my main memories of Dusty before going back to learn about how great he was and all the stuff he did in the 70s and 80s.
It was a... I should have been happy for him when he went to WWF. I should have been, because it was much easier on him, I'm sure. But I hated it. I hated every second of it as a Dusty fan. I felt like he was being, now again, I was old enough to know by this point what was going on. And I felt like he was being humbled by Vince on purpose. And I just, you know, young fan like you, you're not going to know. You don't understand that.
Right.
God, I hated that. I hated every second of it.
Which is funny because he, for the first half of his run, I mean, he was treated pretty well. I mean, he never got up to like world title level, but he won more than he lost, and he was presented. I mean, when I first saw him in early 90, like, I assumed he was a top guy because I knew of the Macho King, and I knew he was a top guy. So I'm like, well, if he's fighting with Dusty Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes must be a top guy as well. So I thought he was presented strongly enough, but I can absolutely see where you're coming from. Now, when I go back and look at the transition he made from NWA to WWF, I can see why fans of his would have been annoyed. But I can say to fans like me, who there were probably lots of, that had no idea who he was, I don't think he was presented, you know, in any kind of negative light until maybe his final couple months, when I think they knew he was leaving and he just kind of transitioned into putting other guys over on his way out the door.
Yeah, and that part, I you know, yes, you're right, and that's all part of it. Do you think... Now, let me ask you this. History can be very kind to legends. It can also be very cruel to legends. But Dusty's legacy is positive, is it not? Would you agree?
Yes, of course.
And but that said, there's some skeletons in the closet, if you will. Some dark, some chapters, some things business wise he probably shouldn't have done. And the Dusty finish is one that comes to mind. Good finish, just overdone. Jim Crockett basically had to sell the company, you know, almost penniless to WCW, to Ted Turner, with Dusty at the helm. He kind of drove it into the ground financially. Fair, unfair? How do we balance that out with all the good? Where do you think it fits in?
I mean, it's a big, you know, big part of what his legacy has to be, because it was such a prominent role. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know exactly what he caused and didn't cause. I mean, there was a time in the business where, you know, politics and the territory, I mean, it was so strong. And, you know, the negative things he did to really hurt the business, oh, I'm sure. Was it, you know, intentional or mean-spirited? No. I think he just made the wrong decisions at times. You know, I think you have to separate that from his in-ring work and his promo work, and in his later years, the great work he did training, like we heard about, and how he mentored a whole other generation of stars. I mean, just look at the outpouring from, whether it's guys from NXT in that generation or guys from, you know, Carino in his generation. Just think of all the people he touched and helped. It's pretty amazing. And I think, you know, the tributes they've been, you know, playing for him over the last few nights shows that, you know, he was a very much an active member of the company. Because generally just active members get, unless you're like a real, real high level legend like Savage was. But I think Dusty has actually even gotten more, I think he's gotten more tribute to him in these initial days than maybe even Savage had. And I mean, I don't know, you can argue level of stardom within the company, but my whole overall point is a guy that maybe made up for those, you know, handful of years where he torpedoed the booking in WCW, I think he made up for in the back end by training or helping prepare a whole nother generation of future stars. And, you know, I saw a couple ideas out there. One, they should like name the Performance Center after him. I think that'd be a really cool touch. And, again, just a guy, one of my favorite comments was from Justin Henry an internet wrestling writer that's out there, and he said, you know, to show you the breadth of what Dusty Rhodes has touched in the world of wrestling, he helped invent War Games and also helped invent Bray Wyatt. I mean, that's the stretch of time that he played an influential role, you know, in the world of wrestling.
I'll give you a story. The one time that I met Dusty Rhodes was also the one time I got to work with Dusty Rhodes, and it was for my friend Casey Thompson down in Florida, and I think it was probably like 2004, 2005, maybe even later than that. I don't remember exactly, but anyway, flew down to Florida, and it was kind of a one-night TV taping for a TV project that was on the Sunshine Network in Florida at the time. We had a lot of fun. It was a great time. And so the limousine pulls up. Hey, it's time to leave. All of the wrestlers leave their rooms, and it's AJ Styles and Shane Douglas and I think Christopher Daniels and several others. Anyway, so this multi-person limousine, long stretch, could fit at least a dozen people. Starts to fill up one by one by one by one by one, and the last two people to get in were me and Dusty. And I said, Dream, you first. And we look in, and there is no more room. There's even a couple of wrestlers sitting on the floor. So we said, hey, we'll figure out a ride. We'll get a ride situation straightened out. So the door closes, the limousine leaves. Dream and I go back inside. And one of the young kids that was there, he and his buddy pull up in an old, like, Ford Expedition, beaten, rusted out. And I said, hey, Dream, how about this? You want to ride with these two kids, or you want me to call a limo? No, baby, this is perfect. This is exactly what my gimmick is. And so he's in the front seat, kid's driving, another kid in the back seat there with me. And Dream is just shooting the shit. And it was just amazing. And he said, Kevin Kelly, if I had $1 million and some TV time, I'd put you and Scott Hudson together on the commentary team and it'd be lights out. I was like, Dream, that would be something else, man. We'll work on getting you that million. It was just so great getting to spend that time. And I'd worked with WWF for 7 years, and I had very few pictures taken with guys. Never had a picture taken with The Rock, never had a picture taken with Stone Cold. Now, granted, at the time, we didn't have phones like we do now, and everybody doing selfies and things like that. But Dream was one guy that I had somebody take my phone and said, please take a picture of me together with the Dream. Dream, would you mind? Can I get a picture with you? And I still have that picture to this day. It meant the world, and I remember showing everybody that I got a picture taken with Dusty Rhodes. But he was just so cool, and it was just so poetic that he and I were the last two stuck there. And it couldn't have worked out any better because I got to spend some time with him, the only time I'd ever spent time with the guy that was my childhood hero.
Yeah, I mean, and great stories there, Kevin. It's really cool that you got to spend that time with a guy, like you said, that was your hero, you know, growing up and watching. And, you know, a guy that has such a crazy legacy on the... you know, on the business. It's just a deep, deep legacy across the board in so many facets.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. I asked Tom before, and Tom kind of played the PC answer, but where does Rhodes rank in the all-time list? And don't give me the panel includes. Give me 1, 2, 3, 4, your opinion.
Just where he'd slot in on those four?
Maybe he's not even your top four. Maybe he's top 10. Maybe he's top 100. I don't know. What do you think? Where is he on yours? I'm curious.
I mean, are we just talking overall? Like just overall package? Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can put him top 10. Top four. I mean, probably somewhere in the top 10. I don't know. I don't think I can put him top four. He was a great worker in one sense, but, you know, not a great worker in others, you know what I mean? Obviously, could talk anyone into the building. Tremendous promo, good, great draw, great mind for the business. I mean, if you're talking overall impact, even if you're talking in-ring, I don't think you can put him top four. I think if you start talking overall impact to the business, I think you can start putting him into the conversation. If you talk about his in-ring career and then his out-of-ring work that he did as well.
three of my top four are Dusty, Flair, and Hogan. So for me, I don't put wrestling skill into that equation when two of my top three are what you would say limited in the ring compared to someone that was much more technically precise.
Right, but if it's close, where, I mean, like, to me, like, all right, so like Austin versus Dusty.
I go Dream because of his longevity. He had a longer run.
Yeah, was his peak hotter than Austin's? I mean, Austin was a next level star. I mean, it's tough to compare the territory stuff for Dusty versus, I mean, Austin had a long career too. I mean, just because he only had, you know, what, a handful of years as the tippity top guy, he was well respected as a great worker and a featured star in WCW in the 90s, early 90s.
He was a better wrestler when he made no money. When he got hurt, after Austin got hurt.
Oh, he shouldn't be dinged for that.
No, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
His top run from 97 to 2001 was his top run. He had a hotter 4 year, 4.5, 5 year period than any 4.5, 5 year period that Dusty ever had.
Without a doubt.
Ever had. Monumentally, not even close. But Dream was on top for, let's see, 78 to 86. And
let me ask you this, though, because I'm sure it's hard and easy in ways, you know, to run a state, right, like Florida. And I'm not going to profess to know the bandwidth of what he ran, versus Austin, who not only had to draw houses, had to, you know, bring in TV ratings and sell pay-per-views during a time when there was so much competition at the level he was at. Like, Dusty didn't have, and we're nitpicking to nitpick levels, you know, I mean, this is like,
yeah, that's what's fun about this.
So I don't want this to be taken.
Right,
I don't want this to be taken, I'm slagging Dusty at all. But my thought is, you know, how much competition did Dusty have within Florida during his peak years versus what Austin had to contend with during his peak years?
Dusty had, he had two jobs. One was to draw people to the arenas, and one was to make his presence on television so captivating. Dusty Rhodes rarely wrestled on television. He'd be involved in angles. He'd get beat up every once in a while. He'd whip some ass every once in a while. But most of the time, he was just there talking. Sometimes he was on the Florida TV, not even at Florida TV. Tapes from Georgia would come in, and he would air that way. But anyway, I see your point. It was a different era. But I think that at the end of the day, I think what we can both agree on is that Dusty's legacy and everything and his impact, I think, is something that will carry on far beyond. Warts and all, JR, as we wrap up this special edition of the Kevin Kelly Show, I think we can both say with great safety and security, much like Dr. Tom, there probably will never be another American Dream.
I agree. Very unique, one of a kind, and I'm really glad he came back to the WWE in the mid-2000s. It became such a fixture, because I really feel like it enhances legacy. I mean, for better or worse, they're the record keepers of history throughout wrestling, just due to the amount of footage and the amount of reach they have. You know, if he had been still in TNA or wherever during this period, he gets a lot of coverage, a lot of love, but not to what we're seeing, I think, and that's just because of the great run he's had since coming back here to the WWE, since 2005 or so. So I'm glad that happened, and he had another 10-year run of working behind the scenes and becoming a mainstay in the company and helping so many young people develop, that it helped really get him back in the mind, or back in the picture, and, you know,
yeah,
being on TV
with
his
that.
Kids and all that. So I think that's helped a lot.
legacy of the American Dream will endure. I know that as we record this on Monday night, as soon as Raw is off the air tonight, I'll be watching the Dream special. I look forward to that. And we're going to come back in a couple of weeks with we'll do a full edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. We wanted to just take some time to thank all of you who have been downloading the podcast, whether it's through the iTunes app or placetobenation.com or any of the ways that you access the show. We want to thank you. We want to thank everybody that's part of the Place to Be Nation family. And for Dan McGinn and for my producer extraordinaire, Justin Rosero, I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks, Dream, for everything that you did for us. This is Kevin Kelly. This is the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation and the website home, placetobenation.com.
That's a wrap, baby.
But you sure can't beat my music.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had the strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox. Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.